listeners, and welcome to another episode of Compare and Campaign. I'm your host, as always, Tom Lando, and with me, as always, is my co-host and co-nomad?
McGill. But I'm also going to be, I've brought a little something extra besides the nomads of Notorious. I brought an unofficial Dune one-page RPG that I'll talk about. So,
what the heck?
I'm also the DM, the Dune Master.
The Dune Master, the Master of Arrakis, etc. It is episode, I didn't write it down again, but I'm pretty sure it's episode 168, and we are recording on the 3rd of November, 2023. Welcome to November. Man, remember when we used to do at the start of the month, we'd do what we'd been up to?
Yeah, we kind of dropped off that, didn't we?
Yeah, I totally forgot about it at some point. Got distracted about all the other things we were doing, I guess.
Do you want to talk about what we've been up to?
I mean, I've mostly been up to a thing that I've been up to in the past, so it'd just be, like, redundant to put it in the show notes. But I've been playing Shadow of War again, you know? I mentioned back last time I was playing Shadow of War, because it used to be I'd been playing it on my sister's Xbox. But I mentioned that there had been a sale on Good Old Games to get it real cheap with all the DLC. And so now I'm playing that on my PC with all the DLC and everything. But, know, I mentioned, like, I've just been kind of depressed, so I haven't been doing much of anything. Got my regular games going. I'm still running Teeth, as you're part of that. And
I played a disastrous adventure just last night. Disastrous because we had the worst luck that I've seen in a long time when it comes to our roles. One of our other players, Alex, was saying that he did the breakdown. We did 26 die rolls throughout the night, and of those, 10 were ones. We rolled 10 ones, and then another 10 were twos and threes. So 20 of the 26 rolls were failures.
Yeah, it was, honestly, it's one of those things where, like, it kind of is something that you have to roll with as a DM. It's like, man, what happens this time? But, yeah, you know, one of the things, sometimes, you know, sometimes when you're running a Forged in the Dark game, it's like I find myself reaching for that complication or that consequence that comes out of a failure. And sometimes I'm reaching and I'm like, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this. And I'm like, get stuck in the indecision. And I'm like, you know what? It's the first thing I thought of. And for you on this occasion, it was you were researching on a monster. And I was like, well, I guess one thing that could go wrong is a bookshelf falls on him. And I thought about some other things that could go wrong. But then I was like, you know what? A bookshelf falls on him. And so a bookshelf fell on you and did you a bit of dealt you a minor injury. And that's how that happened.
The really disastrous stuff all came at the end as I was trying to extract some shards of amber from just like a rock, right? They were just sort of embedded in rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to extract them. And I tried using a pick, tried using a chisel. I tried using explosives, failed all of it. Broke my pick, broke my chisel, and caved in the mine.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, that is actually, it's something that I'm beginning to, how to put this? With Blades in the Dark, the fact that if you fail, I have to impose, like, a consequence on you, sometimes it doesn't feel great to me. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, as you said that, it did occur to me, are we playing it right? Are you supposed to say what the consequence is before the roll?
I'm definitely supposed to say, like, the risky and the position of it. I don't know if I'm supposed to say exactly what will happen, although sometimes if I know that, I will.
Right.
Like, if I have the consequence in my head ahead of time. I will say that the more I've been playing Blades in the Dark, and this is, like, bad, is that the more I've been playing it, the less I've been doing that, like, risky, like, that position and effect thing. I'm not even sure why. I just find, I don't know. There's something about it, and I'm sure that this has something to do with like the role playing backgrounds of me as the person running it and the players who are like used to coming from a different type of game. But there's a tendency I find to just be like, find out what we're rolling and then roll it, you know? When we don't meditate on that, it's something on. So the Adventure Zone just wrapped up their game of Blades in the Dark. And in that case, I think it was something where it was more often that the players would ask, what's my position here? What's my effect here? And again, like, since I am not asked that, since I'm not really prompted, instead, more often the question is like, what are we gonna roll here? And then once we figure it out, we just roll it. Yeah, because of that, I have been slacking on the entire conceit of of projecting the position and effect.
I would not say you're slacking. This ties into actually something that I've been up to. I have been getting things ready, reading the rules to launch a game of Wicked Ones. We've talked about this already on the show. And I want to talk with you at some point about the experience of GMing a Blades in the Dark based game. Just because I feel like I haven't even played vanilla Blades in the Dark. So part of one of the obstacles I'm coming up against as I prep Wicked Ones is I feel like I'm lacking some of the foundation of the game in order to run my own game. Like it was a long time with me playing RPGs before I even took on a GM or DM role. And at that point, I felt very confident in my knowledge of just how the game flows. You know, even if I wasn't used to seeing it from the other side of the DM screen, but I don't feel like I have that knowledge with Blades in the Dark. And so, as I'm learning Wicked Ones, it's like I'm also learning Blades in the Dark right at the same time. And so, what I was saying is, I don't really blame you for falling back into that rhythm because I think as role players who have spent so much time with systems like D&D and even like Palladium systems, like my early experiences with Rifts, the interaction between players and GM is very similar in a lot of those RPGs where it really is like the GM tells the story and then the players can either ask to do something and get up and like prompt to get a check, or the GM can ask them for a check. But all that to say, I think we're just so accustomed to that rhythm that we fall back into it naturally, as opposed to, you know, it's like we have to be more deliberate in order to choose the what is my position, what is, you know, and asking the questions of the system, the way the system is designed. I think it's just habit, basically, is what I'm saying.
I think that's definitely the case. And I think it definitely it. That's why I said it's something that is not just on my end, but it's on the player's end as well. Is like people are not thinking to ask about the position and effect.
But see, I suspect that with our other players as well, not just me, that it's just a lack of background knowledge. It's our background is so much in the other form of RPG that we're just none of us are accustomed to the rhythm and the game loop of Blades in the Dark. I gotta get good. Hopefully, learning how to GM a Blades in the Dark game will help me to understand the rhythm and become a better player.
I've already said I'm super excited for that Wicked Ones game, so anything I can do to assist with that,
At some point in the future, I will pick your brain about how to what it's like running the game. But as far as prepping the game goes, I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on it. A lot of Wicked Ones is like, you know, the GM has to facilitate the game, but as GM, you don't have to do a ton of prep. A lot of it is sort of decided on the fly, where like session zero for our party, our group, that will determine things like where it is set and what kind of monsters everybody are and what kind of dungeon you have. All of those things are decided collectively. So I really just have to learn the rules and learn how to keep the game flowing smoothly within those rules. But a lot of the decisions are made on the player end, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's one of the things I really enjoy about Forged in the Dark is, like, you know, Teeth, there was a pretty big lead-in of me asking questions of you guys about your characters and whatnot to sort of establish what we were doing going into it. And, yeah, it was definitely something that played into it. When I was doing Boots on the Ground as well, it was something where it was like, you know, had to square away who everyone was and what they were doing before we started the game.
Well, I look forward to digging into that with you sometime in the future. Hey, you want to hear something else I've been up to that I think you might like this? This is not an RPG thing, but I just recently started it up and I thought, hey, this is a good recommendation for Tom.
Yeah, sure.
I've decided that I'm going to take in a lot of animated series in November. I got a backlog of different animated series that people have recommended to me and that I need to watch. And some new stuff coming out as well. Some examples of stuff I need to watch. I still haven't watched Arcane. Like, everybody was recommending Arcane to me. So I'm finally going to cross
that. Even I've watched Arcane.
Exactly. Finally going to cross that off the list.
I keep waiting for season two.
I'm intrigued by the upcoming series of Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. You heard about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, where Netflix has reunited the entire cast of the Scott Pilgrim movie, and they're going to do the voices on an adaptation of the graphic novel in series form. So it's going to be different than the movie. It's going to have sort of the complete story and a different pace and maybe different characterization, like in the... In Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the movie, Scott Pilgrim is a real dick. And I think he comes off a little better by the end of the comics. Anyway, and it's all in an anime style that I think looks really good. Looking forward to that. But the one I was going to recommend to you is, you ever heard of this animated show Pantheon?
No, I don't think so.
It's only got two seasons. The second season just came out. And it's done by AMC. And it's an animated show. It's sci-fi, and I guess it's sort of set in like the near future, as the first human minds are being uploaded into computers. It's about the singularity, you could say, where uploaded intelligence is the focus of it, and it focuses on this girl in high school whose father died, but he died working on the uploaded intelligence project, and his digital form starts contacting her. I'm still very early on, but it's got some good sci-fi, you know, like big ideas to it. Good animation. I think it's pretty cool just to see this kind of show rendered as an animated series. I couldn't point to a good reason why they did it animated but not live action. I feel like it would have been just as easy to do live action, but I really appreciate just an adult-oriented animated show, Pantheon. I'm three episodes into the first season now, and just finding it really compelling. Cool sci-fi. I think you might like it. The other one that just came out that I'm going to watch is Scavenger's Reign. I'm very excited about that one. You seen that one? The trailer?
I've just seen the trailer that you sent me.
Yeah, I think that looks really cool. Got a, like, Mobius-esque art style, and I've heard that it's evocative of that short-lived Ridley Scott series Raised by Wolves that I thought was pretty neat while it lasted. So another one that I'm looking forward to. But yeah, Pantheon is my recommendation for you.
So I've been playing Notorious, or I played Notorious, this game that we've been talking about on the podcast.
Yeah, solo RPG by, was it Jason Price, I believe?
So yeah, do you want to just hear about my Notorious adventure?
I sure do. And, last time we talked a little bit just about how you feel about the game, but let's hear about, the adventure that your bot went on and And I guess your ultimate thoughts on the game as a whole.
Yeah, so I was the Nomad 1R Mark 1. I was a bot. My personality was nervous, tense, and I carried a piece of my Pellucid creator around with me as a sort of good luck charm. I will say the personality of nervous and tense, I don't know that that really came into play at all. I wasn't even really aware of it as I played. But I was a bot. My scar was that I was filthy from neglect. My origin was that I was a corrupted Trade Alliance translator. My trigger was that I killed my genius creator amid the confusion of my first factory awakening. I had an auto-tracking laser rifle that gave me a bonus against fighting multiple foes. I got my melee weapon, my, like, pointy, you know, spiky claw bits. But also, I have a melee self-destruct that ignores defense and has a +5 to attack, but it's an automatic game over. So I got that hidden up my sleeve. My outfit is I got glowing eyes, pistons, and blast plate. It grants me +2 defense. My target is Moko Talarn, a Talok, who's vain, arrogant, and wears glass steel shades. He's hiding out on the city planet of Yama, and my client faction was the Old Empire, who wanted Moko Talarn brought in after he assisted in a Mystic Order jailbreak.
You didn't happen to sketch any of these guys the way I did?
No, I didn't draw any of it out. Good. I just wrote it down. So I land my ship in the old factory ruins on the outskirts of a major city in Yama. And I, beginning my adventure, I arrived at a small new uprising enclave, sort of the Rebel Alliance. I found a little enclave of theirs. I spoke with a local who had no choice but to stay loyal to the new uprising. They said they had to be careful what they said because they never knew who's listening. I found out that they were, in fact, wanted by the Old Empire, and so they were sheltering in the enclave but couldn't go beyond its boundaries. While I was at the enclave, I took a rest, got myself a little bit of motivation, and then I headed into the city, where I found a local singing a haunting tune while working, a tune I recognized as a Trade Alliance anthem that was played by delivery bots, and I heard it echoing from below the Skyway train station. So I went down below the Skyway train station to talk to the bot that was singing this Trade Alliance anthem, but the bot was uninterested in recruitment. Then, taking the sky train, I arrived at the Old Empire Palace, the headquarters of the Old Empire. While I was there, I visited the local guild rep. But while I was visiting the local guild rep, a cloaked foe pulled a concealed laser pistol and attacked. I managed to get the upper hand and spared my foe in order to learn that they were hired by the Trade Alliance to ambush me. After leaving the guild rep location, I saw a rebel civilian being pushed around by a hostile soldier. But when I saw that the civilian had been scrawling anti-death bot graffiti on the wall, I decided to leave him to his fate. traveling through the city, I found a Red Moon bag, a bag with Red Moon Syndicate markings on it. And in the bag, I found ID, data, and credits. And I chose to take the credits and noted that burn marks on the bag indicated that the original person who had this bag had fallen to laser fire.
See, this is cool because I can't tell if you have done any of the encounters that I've done. I guess because the game sort of inherently asks you to flavor the different encounters to fit the story that you're creating. That's really interesting. Or maybe I just haven't gotten them yet.
Eventually, I arrived at the Red Moon Syndicate spaceport, And I just had a relaxing time walking the terminals, listening to Trade Alliance delivery bots play their little song, that haunting little tune that I love from the Trade Alliance. Then, while I was at that spaceport, I checked in with another guild rep to get more information on Moko Talarn. But while I was meeting with my guild rep, I was overheard by a Targ cartel spy. So some word of my quest began getting leaked out into the grapevine. While I was at the Red Moon spaceport, a Talok Red Moon agent requested assistance with a raging beast below the spaceport. And after a brutal battle that required me to spend one of my motivation, I defeated the beast, gaining me one notoriety, but losing me one favor. I then arrived at a small town run by locals, despite looking for an opportunity to get repairs, I was deemed too old a model, and nobody was able to give me the repairs that I needed. However, I then descended into the lower depths of Red Moon territory and managed to navigate the territory undetected. Navigating my way back to the Red Moon spaceport, I got into a shootout with a hostile guard who I spared at gunpoint. Apparently, the Red Moon Syndicate isn't universally pleased by my killing that beast.
You know, it's interesting, you saying that you were too outdated to find repairs reminded me of my character's ship, the Termite, and in the Bucket of Bolts system that I use to generate the Termite, one of the things that you do is you choose traits, and one of the traits for the Termite is that it's outdated. And it occurs to me that you could actually use the same, that you could use Bucket of Bolts, but to generate a droid instead of a ship if you really wanted.
I think that line about being too outdated came out of, there was like a thing about, I think it was specifically I had to apply my scar to be a reason that I wasn't able to get proper treatment in the in the town run by locals, and my scar was that I was filthy from neglect and kept up. So I was back in the Red Moon spaceport where I was beginning to take some heat because apparently not everyone was happy about me taking care of that raging beast that I'd been set up to kill earlier. However, I ignored a Red Moon agent threatening an anti-bot civilian because he's an anti-bot civilian, fuck him. That's twice I got that result of a civilian being hassled by a guard that I then left to their fate.
Man, I like that your bot really turns a blind eye.
But then, before I left the Red Moon spaceport, a Murian, a rat-like person, a Murian thief stole evidence of my taking the Red Moon credits. So suddenly, that bag that I had grabbed earlier and grabbed the credits out of, this Murian managed to steal off of me some of the evidence that I was the person who got that bag and ran off. So suddenly, I got reason to get the hell out of Red Moon Syndicate territory.
That's really cool. That I have continued playing Notorious, and that encounter with the thieves, that happened to me just last night when I was playing. And in my game, it was that my nomad Nass had stayed the night in a hostel in a small settlement, and someone in the hostel stole his stun baton, and they were dismantling it to use the energy source for their shock rifle. And it's just cool to hear how it shakes down in your game, how what you decided the thieves would steal changed the story so drastically from mine. Like in mine, it was just like a little haphazard encounter with, you know, it was three just like dumb teenage Kimanos, the amphibian people, who were at this hostel and they stole, you know, something out of my bag because it was unattended. But over in yours, the stakes are much higher as a result of it. I really appreciate how the game sort of conforms to the different stories that are being told. And even something like that encounter, in one game, it can just be like a little, you know, incidental encounter. And then in the other, it can be a bit more serious and motivate your character to move on quickly.
I don't want to lose my claws. I don't want to lose my shock baton, you know?
Yeah.
Fleeing the Red Moon spaceport, I got my first lead. I managed to figure out that one of my targets, like a potential target, somebody who knew something about my target, was taking the SkyTrain, and so I arranged a SkyTrain ambush, which I did using some small explosives on the SkyTrain route, but the blast of those explosives overrode the heat safeties, so that when I entered the SkyTrain, the temperature was rapidly rising. And the lead was another bot. A bot who was aloof, rude, and had a camo pattern blast plate paint job. And this individual was a Red Moon assassin, programmed with the latest stealth tech to kill for the Red Moons. And confronting this Red Moon assassin, I learned that the target, Moko Talarn, was allegedly acting on a deep debt to the Red Moons. And when he busted that Mystic Order member out of Old Empire Holding. But upon battling with this other bot, we fought and fought until Imperial troops arrived en masse during our skirmish on the train, forcing us both to flee. After fleeing that encounter and not, you know, having to, both of us just took off after the heat got too great. Not the literal heat, but the heat from the Empire. After running away from that, I arrived at a small town run by locals, visited the local cantina, and got jumped by a couple of drunk humans. This time, I shot up the place with my auto-tracking laser rifle, clearing the joint, but spared the drunks. So basically, these two drunks are like, I don't like you. We don't serve droids here. I don't like you either, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? Fuck this. And I took out my auto-tracking laser rifle and just like blow up the whole bar. Everybody's like, oh my God, get the fuck out of here. And then like these two drunks are left quaking their boots. And I'm like, I'm out of here. And I just left. Then outside the cantina, or later, I watched a fight with some kind of vampire wielding a sword and a whip, and observed as the locals got exsanguinated for their trouble fighting this creature. That was basically, so there's one option that is like there's a monster that needs to be killed, and you have the option to either kill the monster or see someone else fail to kill the monster.
Yeah, I've gotten that one.
And so I killed the monster when it was the Raging Beast, but then when I decided that it was a vampire, I decided I'd just watch to see what happens. After that, I decided to stay in town. I saw old Trade Alliance bots being dismantled and decided to lay low for a while. A new uprising agent discovered my ship, and I had to use my remote speaker ability to try and talk to him, even though I wasn't at my ship. This new uprising agent claimed to have met the Trade Alliance CEO of the Arms Corporation that designed my ship's weapons. Sure enough, when I rushed back to check, my munitions bay was emptied. Using the stolen Red Moon credits, I refilled my munitions bay, and then I arrived at a mega market run by locals and spoke with a local who was deep in debt with the Red Moon Syndicate, and I bartered for supplies, but then in bartering for supplies got rid of any connection to the theft of Red Moon credits that I'd taken part in, and then, but then the Red Moon Syndicate showed up to raid the Mega Mart, and I managed to sneak out while the guy who was in debt to the Red Moon Syndicate, he took the full fall for the theft of the credits that I was responsible for. I then returned to that new uprising enclave that I'd been to when I first arrived. I spoke with a local Mirian worker that showed no interest in the war, claiming he was safe in the enclave. The fool, I put as a little note. What a fool thinks he's safe in his enclave on the Empire's own planet. Then I took a little rest, get myself some extra motivation. Then came my second lead. On a platform high above a river of sludge, with a stampede of sludge amphibians rushing towards us, I faced Valk, who was nervous and skittish, fears that their bad wing, they were in one of the avian creatures, and they had a bad wing that they were afraid would act up again. This rival scoundrel working for the Trade Alliance sympathized with the target's need for revenge against the old Empire for getting their brother killed, and I had them in my claws, but I spared them because they were a fellow nomad. And I learned from them that the Trade Alliance believes the Red Moon Syndicate was clearing a debt to the Mystic Order by breaking their warrior out, and employed an assassin bot and someone deep in debt to them with cause to hate the Empire. So basically, the target had busted out a Mystic Order member out of holding, but what I'm starting to learn here from my lead now is that, in fact, this job was, like, desired by the Red Moon Syndicate. They had a debt to this Mystic Order member, and so they arranged to bust him out using their assassin bot, that first lead that I had fought, and Moko Talarn, who I'm now learning had a grudge against the old Empire because they killed his brother. I then arrived at a small new uprising outpost after sparing my fellow nomad and spoke with a local Charon worker who felt that the Trade Alliance was a greater threat than either the Empire or the new uprising. The Charon local feared the Trade Alliance more than the Empire. I took some time to rest there. After my rest, I saw a swarm of undead overwhelm a new uprising patrol and decide to get the hell out of there.
Your game has so many more, like, horror tropes than mine. I don't have any zombies or vampires in my game.
I arrived at a scrap crawler run by locals where I rested, later found a blasted pod full of Trade Alliance bots taken out by the Empire, which really hurt my motivation. It was a shame to see all my fellow Trade Alliance bots wiped out like that. So then, I returned to the new uprising enclave, that one that I keep going back to, and spoke with a local Pellucid who claimed knowledge of my creator being a Pellucid himself. I took another rest there, and then after that, I found my target. I found them hiding in a forest of bioluminescent fungi in the depths beneath the city. An old machine awakened at my presence, spoiling my surprise as I tried to sneak up on them. The Moko Talarn called me their puppet and revealed that they're the hacker that corrupted my software.
Oh, man.
Another lair, another debt. Moko claims that this job is simply a favor for the Trade Alliances to establish a treaty with the Empire while conveniently taking out an enemy hacker. Now I'm a loose end to the Trade Alliance. But I had a solution to that, because in my struggle with Moko Talarn, I was really losing the upper hand, and then I remembered that I had the self-destruct. And so I used my self-destruct to take out Moko Talarn, and that's how my story ended. The Trade Alliance can't follow up on the loose end that I was, because I wasn't a loose end anymore. I blew myself up.
You're a crater.
Yeah. And I took out my target. So there you go.
That's a fitting end. I like that you went out. I mean, the inspiration drawn from The Mandalorian is very obvious, but I feel like this is like the end of Mandalorian Season 1, where that IG-88 droid self-destructs to save the day.
Yeah, only I wasn't saving the day for anybody. Man, did you notice I didn't get a single asset?
Yeah, that's true. You didn't get any recruits so far.
I tried to recruit a bot, like, first thing, and he was like, no, I'm just here working.
So far, I've gotten one per game, but I don't always succeed in recruiting. So, Tom, I mean, that you played a full game. You played your droid up until his death, got your target, had some good encounters. What do you think of this? What do you think of Notorious?
Neat. I think in some places, some more tables could be useful. I talked to a lot of locals, and there's not a lot of range for what the locals can talk about.
Yeah, it sounds like you got the speak with locals thing quite a bit.
Yeah, and a lot of it was like, I don't care about the war. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. They're just, it's only a table of like six things. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you get the same results a lot, I find.
Yeah, and one minor complaint that I have is similar to that, the threat neutralized table. Did you do any threatening?
No, I didn't do any threatening.
Where I can, I try to threaten before I fight. And it's often when, you know, it'll be like you encounter, well, for example, the Kimano dweebs in the hostel who stole my stun baton. The result I got on the table was just that you encounter hostiles who are loading their shock rifles. And so because they didn't attack me right away, I was like, I'm going to try to threaten first. And I enjoy that I can threaten to prevent a fight from happening. But the table for what happens after you neutralize a threat, it's very similar to those speak with tables where it's just like, you know, it gives you six possible reasons that that person was hostile towards you. And then it'll ask you a question. So it'll be like, they thought that you were after them. You thought that you were a nomad hired to capture them. What are they wanted for? And so there are a lot of little prompts like that, similar to the speak with locals table. And I don't know. I almost feel like a table with more options but fewer questions for that works better. Because whenever I neutralize a threat, I'm just like, okay, so they back off and I move on. Like, I don't really need to know what they think about nomads or anything like that. My hope, though, is that the Outsiders expansion that I backed on Kickstarter for this will add a bit more stuff, add a bit more. I mean, presumably it's going to add quite a bit more, but hopefully there will be more tables for when you speak to people and expand on these things. Besides speaking to the locals, any other thoughts on the system? Do you enjoy the little dust-up combat encounters, or were there any moments where you were like, ah, that's really cool, I like how that shook down?
I gotta say that like, so there reached a point where I had my stats at a point that I was like, I think I'm ready to take on the target now. And then once I was in that mode of thinking, every time I didn't get the target was kind of frustrating for me. But then when I got the target and I started losing the fight, that was really frustrating. I'm really glad that, like, it was honestly a thing where I was kind of forgetting that I had the self-destruct. And then I was like, man, what do I have here? Like, what can I possibly do? Like, I'm out of motivation and stuff. That is one thing, though, is that I had misread the rules about motivation. Like, once I finished it, I was like, oh, because the thing was, on one of the rolls with my target, we both rolled six, or we both rolled five or something like that. And I didn't realize that I can use my motivation to re-roll the enemies.
Yeah.
Die, which is 100% what you're supposed to do in that position.
Oh yeah.
Because what I thought was that I had to re-roll my own die, and I'm like, well, I'm just trying to get a six now, and it's so unlikely that I'm gonna get that. So I feel like I wasted a lot of motivation doing that, but that was just like my own fault.
So, and that's something, just using motivation and balancing the different stats, That was definitely an issue I ran into in my first game as well. And then the second time around, where I continued my pursuit of my first target, Mako Suds, I went into it a bit wiser. And so when I was rolling on, you know, the exploration and destination encounters, anytime it gave me a choice where it's like, do you stand by and, you know, watch the beast, you know, kill somebody and you don't interfere, or do you get involved? I would try to also think about how to balance things out, right? If I wasn't, you know, if I only had 2 motivation, but I had 3 notoriety, and then I wound up with a choice where one option would give me notoriety and the other would give me motivation, I'd pick the motivation just so I could build up to the eventual showdown. Because something that definitely happens is once you get to the point where you start triggering the leads, when your notoriety gets high enough, it does happen over and over. Like, unless you lose a significant amount of notoriety, like if you get up to 5 notoriety, it's going to be a while before you stop triggering leads, unless you just roll a 1 on the exploration table, which says you don't get a lead. So I played a bit more strategically the second time around, and I found it a lot smoother. I won way more combats. I mean, I talked about this on our last episode. Definitely didn't have as much difficulty winning combats as I did during my first game.
I didn't do any of that. I think I mentioned last episode, but I, at every opportunity, I rolled dice to see what my choice
right.
was. So everything was randomized.
Right. And I mean, you can play it that way, but that's not in the rules to play it that way. So... I did find just playing it with a bit more strategy, a bit more forethought, instead of blindly role-playing or doing everything random, did make the game function a bit more smoothly. I think I told the whole tale of how I captured my first target, right? I think I covered everything.
I think so. Did you? I don't know.
I killed Mako. Tracked him down. Yeah, I definitely talked about this. And then I got to roll an epilogue. So wait, you killed your target, but I guess you don't get an epilogue because you died, right?
My epilogue, it's funny, I did roll it and it was all this stuff about like being wanted and stuff. Like it fell in line with the... It fell in line with the idea that I was like a loose end that the Trade Alliance wanted to clean up. But being blown up really like negated that whole end of the story.
Yeah, it was funny because my epilogue after killing my first target... I freed my asset from the cell, I retrieved the termite, and then I didn't kill Mako, actually. I captured him, and I took him to my employer, Scab the Targ. And Scab, my epilogue was that Scab was so pleased that I took Mako alive that, and in addition to that, uncovered his plot to steal Scab's bots. And so the Targs offered me a retainer contract and another assignment. And so I rolled up my next assignment, which is a Ghoul, G-H-O-L, a horned alien named Jed Kabay. And I've only just launched off in my pursuit of Jed Kabay. I only had one major encounter so far, which is the thing that happened at the hostel where the youths stole my stun baton. But... my plan is definitely to keep playing until Nass dies, at least. And then I'll reassess to see if I want to roll up a new one. Either way, I'm definitely going to play the Outsiders expansion. So it'll be, we'll see if I play the Outsiders expansion with Nass or with a whole new character. And even then, if Nass dies, I will probably continue finishing the Bucket of Bolts story of the termites' history, because I left space for 2 more captains. Perhaps the next nomad I play will be captain number 5.
Yeah, so that's my story. I mean, the story of R1 Mark 1, whatever.
I get the impression...
I was just a robot.
I get the impression that I like Notorious a lot more than you do.
Yeah, probably. You're more into Star Wars than I am, I feel like.
Oh, it might be true. And, I mean, less so these days, but I do like me some Star Wars.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, well, you know, it's also, it may just be the state of mind that I've been in lately. Maybe could I'm just be. Not in as much of a mood for a solo RPG as you are.
Yeah.
Although, really, a solo RPG is, like, kind of perfect for me these days because it doesn't require the same amount of, like it sort of, it plays itself to an extent, you know?
That's exactly why I'm enjoying it.
Activities.
Like you said, this passive kind of activity, and I can do it on my own time, do it at my own pace, and it doesn't give me the full enjoyment that I get out of an RPG like when we were playing Teeth, but it does give me sort of a taste of that. And I like that I can just sort of do it myself. I don't have to worry about anybody's schedules. I don't have to prep anything. In fact, the way I've been playing Notorious is just if I have, you know, like if I'm rendering a video or I'm downloading something and I've got 15 minutes to spare, I'll do a couple of rolls through the exploration destination game loop and just note them down in my notebook. And then move on and, you know, resume whatever activity I was doing. I like that it's a little game that can fill in the cracks of my day. And not only that, one thing that I think it has a leg up on a lot of the other games that I'm playing in that you can do it in as much or as little time as you like. Like, I've sung the praises of the solo card games I've been playing from thegamecrafter.com, but the one downside to those is that I find that when I play them, I have to play the game from start to finish, because otherwise I will forget where I was. Like, if I leave the game and I come back, I will often forget what step I was on. And so, you know, if I get distracted, it might as well be game over for one of those solo card games. Likewise, for a lot of video games, one of the video games I'm playing right now is Marvel's Midnight Suns, which I am enjoying quite a bit. It's XCOM, but with Marvel characters, and specifically the more horror-themed ones like Blade or Ghost Rider. But that game takes a while to load. You know, XCOM always has long load times, so it takes a while to load up. It's not a game that you can play in short bursts. There's a lot of like dialogue scenes, too. There's a lot of plot. And so I find if I'm playing that one, I need like minimum an hour to really enjoy a session of Midnight Suns. And just any video game, like there is a certain amount of time that you need to kind of chunk off for it, unless it's something very simple, you know, like Tetris or something like that. But Notorious, I can play for as short I want or as long as I want. You know, if I only have 5 minutes to spare, well, I'll roll the next encounter and just write a few bullet points down in my notebook, and then I'm done. And next time I'll continue off where I left off. So I think that that's one of the reasons that it appeals to me so much as a game, is just because of that flexibility. I like, as I said before, I'm playing it, you know, unplugged. I'm playing it in an actual pen and paper notebook. So I like that. If I got something that's occupying my computer, if I'm rendering video or something and I got to leave my computer alone, well, I can just go play it in my notebook here for any length of time. And it has absolutely piqued my interest in not only solo RPGs, but like zine RPGs, kinds of things that you find on itch.io, like Ceremony in Shadow is a good one. But there are a lot of single-player games, too, that you can find in the zine format. People running Kickstarters for them, and all over itch.io as well. I actually, in researching Notorious and solo RPGs and zine RPGs, I found out that there's a month. There's zine month. Do you know about this?
No, I knew about Free RPG Day or whatever, and things like that, but
Zine Month.
Not Zine Month.
This is out of Dicebreaker.com, which is the the board and RPG news site that I've been reading a lot lately. And the Zine Month is in February, and I found Dicebreaker.com's list of 31 indie RPGs to check out during Zine Month 2023. And then there's just like a list of these zine RPGs with a little blurb about each of them. And some of these, man, they sound really fun. I'll probably look into a few of them. Like, listen to here. Why don't I go through a few of these since we got time to spare? And it sounds like we're kind of done with Notorious. Is there anything else you want to mention about Notorious?
Not really. I was just kind of thinking, like, if there was something that was more my vibe, I'm wondering, like, I feel like I have a situation right now where I've, like, so I'm running a World of Darkness game now instead of Boots on the Ground. And part of what I've done for that is I've created, like, a huge network of, like, supporting characters with just, like, simple little descriptions, like, so-and-so is a vampire hunter, so-and-so is a bored socialite. So they're all concepts taken from the World of Darkness books that are suggested concepts for different characters. And so I've got like this network of supporting characters that I'm sort of like, they're all there ready for when I need them. And in play, I just sort of have to decide which characters the player characters run into and how they interact and things like that. And I wonder if there's like a way that you could like make that into a solo RPG, you know, is like have like a rogues gallery of vampires and then just sort of like play in among them and see what happens. It'd be harder, obviously, than designing like the sort of broad factions that Notorious works around. But I feel like that would be like more my speed.
So you feel like maybe just a sticking point is the setting? You'd enjoy it more in a different setting than the Star Warsy one?
Maybe. But like, I think there also has to be like a larger sort of like cast creation dynamic to it for me to really sink into it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I absolutely agree that there's like a degree of depth that is missing from Notorious, and it may just be inherent to the format. But I don't know. I guess this is one of the reasons that I'm really curious to see what the Outsiders expansion brings to it. Maybe it will give us what we feel it's lacking. I know that one of the things that was being promoted with it was this idea of trilogy mode, some sort of, I don't know, I guess the Star Wars trilogy format, but for your character from Notorious. I'm curious to see what that's all about. And presumably, like, new races, new planets, new tables to roll on.
And, actually, they, shoot, what was I gonna ask? Oh, yeah, doesn't Wicked Ones have a solo version?
It does, but I haven't looked into it yet.
Maybe we should,
yeah, maybe that'll be, well, you know, when I pick your brain about Forged in the Dark games, I can also dive into the solo version of Wicked Ones. Certainly.
Have you bought it?
Have I bought it?
Just to be clear. Yeah.
I have the free version of Wicked Ones.
Okay, but that doesn't have the solo rules at all.
No,
right?
I'll have to okay. Purchase the source book. That said, just maybe looking at the gameplay loop of it, I can see how it would function very similar to like a more complex version of Notorious, because as with something like Teeth, and I assume that this is the case with all like Blades in the Dark, Forged in the Dark games, just the different phases, right? And the idea of like the in Teeth we have the season clock. And so I can see how something like Wicked Ones would function where in the lurking phase, instead of everybody stating what they want to do and the GM, you know, working with them on that, you could just pick what you want to do and sort of write it down in your notebook, and pick one activity for each of the different phases, things like that. Simply because with Wicked Ones, the idea of enemies coming in and infiltrating your dungeon, like that is an entire phase of the game anyway. So I could see that working just if you're playing alone. You're like, oh, and now the enemies come.
I want to see what them tables look like.
Mm-hmm. So, Dom, do you want to hear about some of these other indie zine RPGs bouncing from Notorious to this list that I found? Thought these some of these sound good, and maybe we can find other games to talk about in future episodes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I kind of want to talk about Solo Wicked Ones in future episodes. But,
oh, I mean, we'll talk about that too. This is yet another case. You know, I've talked about how I've been falling down these rabbit holes online. I feel like, you know, I turn over a rock, I find a rock, that rock is Notorious. I turn it over, and then underneath it is a huge list of other itch.io, zine, RPGs, solo RPGs. Notorious leads me to Outsiders, leads me to Bucket of Bolts, leads me to Artifact, and then so on and so forth. And so, in just looking into these different zine RPGs, I found this list. So, how about this one? Terminus. Expanding on designer John Boyle's one-page RPG, Terminus puts the player in the spectral shoes of a ghost as they encounter their last visitor before moving on to whatever comes next. The one- or two-player RPG uses a deck of tarot cards for narrative prompts, in combination with the environment around the player or players, inviting players to carry the zine with them and see what new surroundings may inspire. Melancholy and reflective, Terminus is a game that encourages us to recognize and observe what's around us before it might be too late. Already, I find these ideas really interesting. I guess if you're doing like a solo RPG, the way to make yourself stand apart is to incorporate just as many things that are inherent to the act of playing the game as possible, I guess. Like, I love the idea that where you play this game Terminus actually influences what goes on in the game. Just saying that and knowing that it's a one or two player RPG, but like I'd play it one player, that gets me excited because I'm like, okay. So unlike Notorious, I can't just always play this at my desk while my computer's doing something else. It's going to get too samey. So that will encourage me to, you know, the next time I'm on like a road trip, I'll bring a copy of Terminus along and see what happens when I play it in different environments than usual. I like that. It's creative. Here's one that reminded me of Lucayo and the Gates. To the point where I had to check to see if it was in the inspiration list on the website for the Gates, but it's not. It's called The Connection Machine. Confronting trauma takes on a very literal form in this GM-less RPG zine by Tanya Floker, as players explore the dreamy world of the fourth dimension and their own minds. As they delve into the time-bending realm given physical form by a quantum computer, their consciousnesses will be pushed to their extremes and spawn the embodiment of trauma, PTS demons, from their memories. With influences from surreal sci-fi movies such as Quantum Leap, Stalker, The Connection Machine looks to blend its trippy setting with powerful emotion and narrative depth. And the document for it looks like it has some pretty sweet art, too. And here's one that stood out to me. There's so many of these, so I'm not going to like read the entire article, but we'll eventually post it somewhere, I'm sure. It's called 31 Indie RPGs to check out during Zine Month 2023 on Dicebreaker.com. Dino Car. Who says making art needs to be hard or serious? In this colorful combination of role-playing game and crafting activity, players control dinosaurs driving cars as they map out their world before traveling around it. Julie Ann Munoz's talents as an illustrator and graphic designer on numerous indie gems is clear in her art-driven gameplay design that encourages players to work together to create a shared world of roads, landscapes, and landmarks spanning both open countryside and urban sprawls. Once players have created their world, their automobile-asauruses can journey across it, telling stories and discovering new details along the way. As suitable for kids and parents looking for a fun family activity as it is for adults who just love to get creative, Dino Car is an adorable artsy-craftsy delight. I think that sounds pretty fun. The collaborative world-building before you play in the world, it's very Wicked Ones, as we were just saying, and it sounds like the setting is basically Cadillacs and dinosaurs, that awesome old cartoon. Goblin Gonzo. Now, obviously, This speaks to your interest, Tom. Built on the bones of Mork Borg, which we've also talked about, Goblin Gonzo carries the RPG's punk rock attitude into a standalone game filled with chaotic gobos, splashed with colorful artwork and full of new rules on everything from goblin brews to pissing contests. Goblin Gonzo lives up to its name as a wildly inventive and unabashedly messy spin on the familiar fantasy creatures. The book includes brand new goblin classes, along with their mutations, and monsters for them to encounter in included scenarios set in a gobified carnival and castle. If you ever had the urge to wallow in mud, set fire to things, and talk to a pet rat, you're unlikely to find a better zine than this, better zine in this or any other month. Now, Tom, I actually sent you a digital copy I found of the source book for Mork Borg not long ago. Did you look through that?
I mean, I've looked at Mork Borg. I feel like Mork Borg is the thing that's been shown to me as much as, like, Blades in the Dark.
And yet you haven't played Mork Borg. Is there something that's keeping you from taking the plunge? You played the G.I. Joe RPG sooner than Mork Borg, and if you had asked me, will Tom sooner play G.I. Joe or Mork Borg, I would not have picked G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something about Mork Borg, it's like, I don't know, it's just nothing, it doesn't really strike me. I don't know. It's really cool and everything, but like...
That's a mystery.
I don't know. It's just like...
It's so confusing.
It just seems like, I don't know, my D&D game is already really metal, right? So why do I gotta have a whole other game to make my D&D metal?
I mean, fair enough, I guess. Though the answer may be because then you can also play this Goblin Gonzo, like, punk rock goblin heavy metal game. But I guess you could just do that in D&D too.
Theoretically, like, I don't know. I've never been so taken with Mork Borg that I'm like, oh man, I gotta play this, I gotta get this. Like, there's something about Mork Borg where it's like very, it feels very style over substance, where it's like, I don't particularly get what the mechanic of it is.
Have you looked into it? No. Have you read it?
No, not particularly. No.
I get it. Like, it's, I will say it's a slightly intimidating document to get into, just because the design is awesome, but it's also not like totally
accessible.
That's exactly the word. But maybe it would be if I just started reading it, because I too haven't actually like read through the source book. I've just leafed through it, but I haven't, because I'm not playing a game of Mork Borg, I haven't taken the plunge on that one yet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like it's the same thing with another very art driven game that we brought up. What was the name of that one? It was like it had a weird name.
An RPG with a weird name?
Yeah, that had like a lot of tables and was all art and stuff. It had like we covered it on the podcast.
We've covered so many with a weird name. Can you describe the setting more?
Like it had a mechanic for like dice getting smaller to represent your running out of ammo.
Oh my gosh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, but that was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it had a weird name. It was like Gromp or something.
Well, now I need to know. I'm going to look this up. Gromp.
I don't know. It was just like a weird word, it sounded like, I thought.
Anyway, all right. So if not Mork Borg, do any of the RPGs I described appeal to you? I mentioned like Terminus, Connection Machine, Dino Car, Goblin Gonzo.
So Terminus, the thing is, I don't care about ghosts. So
what, you don't?
Terminus loses out pretty quick.
Hey, hang on.
Ghosts.
Why don't you care about ghosts?
They're not. It's like, ooh, I'm not there. Fuck that. Might as well be a geist or you know, like a ghost what possesses somebody, and then, you know, sort of part ghost, part person. But a ghost itself, I don't care about hauntings. I don't care about ghosts. I don't care about none of that.
I'm honestly kind of surprised. I mean, I didn't think that that you'd be some huge fan of ghosts, but you're so against them, Tom. That I'm shocked. I'm shocked, man. I thought you liked all manner of horror creature.
No, they just don't excite me, man.
Oh, all right. Well, no Terminus then. Well, okay. No Terminus, but what do you think of the idea of a solo RPG that that asks you to play in different environments to experience different facets of it? Hey, I mean, you know, before we started recording, you were talking about how you're trying to go out and do things more. Wouldn't that help help you out?
What?
Having a solo RPG that you could play in different locations, and the different locations where you played would affect what happens in the game.
Yeah, theoretically, I guess.
Okay, but that's still a big old nope on Terminus from Tom, because screw ghosts, apparently. What do you think about these other ones, though?
What about, sorry, what are the other ones?
We had the Connection Machine, which I commented has some elements of the Gates in it.
Yeah, PTS demons. I don't know about that. We'll see.
It's a little ham-fisted. Or Dino Car. What do you think of Dino Car?
Dino Car is kind of neat. I like the idea of... The thing is, the like creation of the world is more exciting to me than the Dino Car part.
Yeah, I'd have to... That's one where if I was going to pick it up, I would like find... I'd look up some people playing it on YouTube first, because I'd be curious to know what the actual gameplay was. Like you know, the idea of mapping out a strange world where the dinosaurs in cars can play, that has a lot of appeal, but what does the play actually look like? I had also mentioned Goblin Gonzo. It sounds like you're just bouncing off of Mork Borg, though. It's too much your thing.
I probably played Mork Borg before I played Goblin Gonzo. I don't know.
Hey, do you ever find this? Maybe this is just something that happens with me, but I expect it's not. You ever find that there'll be things that, like, there'll be something like, you know, Mork Borg, a lot of people recommend it to you, and you're just kind of resistant. You're like, yeah, you know, I'll get to it eventually. And then eventually you do get to it, and you're like, fuck, they were right.
That was Blades in the Dark. That was Blades in the Dark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for me.
I did not realize that you were so reluctant to pick it up.
Oh, I guess I wasn't that reluctant to pick it up, but it was sort of thing where, like, people kept mentioning it, and I was like, yeah. Everybody loves Blades in the Dark. It's sort of the same way with Mork Borg, honestly. It's like, I found it. It's Gozer.
Gozer.
That's what I was trying to remember. I knew it was a G-O something. I knew it was, like, Gromf or Groff or Gorf or something. It was Gozer. G-O-Z-R.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. There it is. Yeah. And you know what's funny is there's another... Yeah, with these awesome sheets. Man, I had forgotten about this, and once again, I'm falling in love with the design of it. But yeah, good comparison to Mork Borg, because it's very messy in its layout, and while that is some of the appeal, it also kind of makes it unintuitive to look at. Gozer, damn. Thanks for the reminder. And you know, it's funny, I actually found out about this through boingboing.net, which is the same place I found out about Mork Borg. So you'd sooner play Mork Borg than Goblin Gonzo. And yeah, those are the ones that I had mentioned. I guess maybe of those, Dino Car has the most potential for a future episode, but we'll see. We'll see. We still got like Wicked Ones and other stuff to cover first. Tom, I brought one more thing to the podcast. I think we have just enough time for it. You want to hear about Dune, the RPG?
Oh, yeah, your Dune RPG, eh?
Yeah, this is pretty ridiculous. I should wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hang on. I got to make sure that I credit this properly. Okay, good. Yeah, this is not a for serious Dune RPG. I don't even know. Do you know if there's a for serious Dune RPG out there?
Wouldn't surprise me if there was.
I mean, there are Dune Lego sets now, so I guess there must be an RPG somewhere. I think there's a board game.
Yeah, there's a Dune RPG, Adventures in the Imperium.
Ah, I should look into that too. I wonder what that's like in terms of the system it works with. What kind of a game is it?
Wow, you could get the Atreides Game Master bundle for $188.52.
Oh my god. I mean, look. I think RPGs...
Seize control of Arrakis with these starter bundles. Order now and get the free PDF. My god, I could pay over $100 to get a free PDF.
It's almost $200. That is an insane amount. That had better be a really nice addition. And the game itself, I gotta say, for that price, the game had better be really fun. Because I would hate to shell out like $180 for a game that I only play once.
Let you have a look at
the Imperial or Adventures in the Imperium role-playing game. Very interesting. Well, I
core rulebook standard edition for $77.12, but it was an Ennies gold winner, so
wow. Well, you know, maybe I'll cover this when Dune
Imperial limited edition $942.60.
What? I 60 cents.
All these cent percentages, I don't know what they're doing.
I mean, like I will grant them that
currency.
That the product looks very nice in these pictures. That source book with the cool like golden eagle sigil on it, I guess it, which is the sigil of the House Atreides. It sure looks nice, but I'm not gonna. And the Sand and Dust Collector's Edition with the graphic of the sandworm on it looks great. But that's pretty rich for my blood. Oh, but you can get the free PDF for literally free. You can get the quick start PDF for free. So, you know, credit where credit's due. At least they're giving a free entry point to people if you want to take a look, get a preview of what the RPG is like. But that is intense. That is a pricey, pricey product.
Oh, yeah. There, I see the quick start.
Yeah. So at least there's one little freebie to give you a taste before you have to drop, you know, $100 on some source book. But no, this is not the official Dune RPG that I'm talking about. This is a silly one-page Dune RPG by Sienna Sasha. It's called Dune, the very official RPG for people who have definitely read and understood the books. Tom, have you read the books? How into Dune are you?
Not that into Dune, you know. I know it. I've watched the movies.
Do you like Dune more than Star Wars?
I may have read the first one. No.
No?
Well, I don't know.
Dune definitely seems more like your thing than Star Wars. You know, like Dune, you gotta snort this
political intrigue.
Well, not just that, but you gotta like snort the space drug to travel across the universe or whatever. They're the Travelers Guild, where they're humans who have taken so many space drugs that they can navigate people through the stars. The idea that there aren't computers and that people have become the computers. And then, you know, you have races of people who ride on giant carnivorous worms. Oh, that sounds more Tom-themed than anything in Star Wars.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. I was about to say maybe I like Star Trek more than Dune, but even that, I don't know. They're all big things, and I don't know if any of them are really my my particular jam.
It's
a difficult question if you ask me to compare them.
That's interesting. It's very interesting to me. Are you? Would you just say that you're more of like a horror or fantasy guy than sci-fi?
I don't know about that because like I'm really into like madness and things. Right, you know, yeah. Like when I think and of like my number really like one DS9. Fandom, it's madness, and I like. Yeah, and well, and for a while, like my real like genre jam was genre jam was just like, I don't know, kind of like near future sort of, like I was really into the Matrix and things like yeah. that, you know. I liked Southland Tales.
Southland Tales, the RPG?
I say with laughter. Yeah, I don't know if I'd play Southland Tales, the RPG, but, like, you know, something about that, like, you know, it's, like, modern day, but with, like, an extra bit of technology going on. I don't know.
Hey, cool. That means that my recommendation for the show Pantheon might actually be really on point.
It might be, honestly, but I don't know. It's these days... I mean, the thing is, I don't even consider myself as being that into horror. It's just that really? I like World of Darkness, you know? Like, I just like the monsters all hanging out and stuff more than I like the, like, horror itself, you know?
I mean, that counts, though. And, yeah, oh, man, I don't know, Tom. I'm really confused by these assertions because, as we've talked about in the past, you used to be a frequent attendee of the Fantasia Film. Fantasia Film Festival's all about horror. I mean, it's also about, like, fantasy and other genres, but I would say horror is definitely front and center at that festival.
Yeah, but, you know, I was always most pleased with a horror movie when it wasn't what I expected it to be. Like, if a horror movie turned out to be funny, that was, like, a lot better for me at Fantasia than, like, just a straight-up horror movie.
Okay, fair enough.
I find, like,
a
lot of just, like, straight-up horror movies would just kind of bore me.
You like the horror tropes, but not the scares.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Interesting. Man, I feel like I learned something about you. Still learning stuff about you after all these years, Tom. I really thought, like, I thought for sure that Morkborg would really appeal, and you'd probably like Dune more
Everybody
than Star Wars.
Everybody expects me to be really into Morkborg.
And, it's so you. This is going to be a thing.
Yeah,
this is
I know.
Be,
it's very metal.
This is going to be the thing that I was talking about, where years from now, you will finally read the Morkborg source book, and then you'll be like, Miguel, we got to play a Morkborg campaign. We got to do it.
I just, you know, there's nothing that I associate, like, there's no system that I associate Morkborg with that I think of as being really innovative or revolutionary to role-playing. And so, like, I don't know. I tend to look at it and just see, like, a pretty extravagant OSR kind of game. But not, maybe not even OSR, but, like, I've never had it sold to me mechanically that, like, there's something so different about Morkborg that I should really try it. The way that Forged in the Dark won me over.
Yeah, this is something we've talked about in the past too, is the idea of, like, we've looked at RPGs in the RPG Danger Room and gone, like, this is so close to this other thing. This is so close to D&D. You said this about Cairn, remember?
Who cares?
Exactly. You were saying, like, this is just so close to, like, first edition D&D that why wouldn't I just play first edition D&D?
And Cairn was very, like, OSR. Like, yeah. Like, what... It really kind of, like, escaped me in the episode, I think. But then I was like, oh, yeah, there's a name for this. It's OSR. And, like, I've seen OSR games. And so, yeah, there was nothing there that jumped out at me of, like, oh, I've got to play this one over all the other ones.
And that's what I was saying about that one, Dino Car, as well, where it's, like, the idea of collaborating to build the map together... That's pretty cool, but the description really skimmed over the gameplay, and that's what I'd be curious about before I shelled out some dough for a copy of Dino Car. And, you know, maybe that's what's going on with Morkborg as well, is maybe it's just, like, too similar to other things that you've already played and enjoyed. And so when you come to it, you're like, yeah, but I already get this from other things. Like, why would I play Morkborg and just play, you know, Fleshscape or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It, like, that is actually a really good point, is, like, Fleshscape kind of jumps out at me more than Morkborg or anything else. And it's like, Fleshscape is very bare bones. I think it's just like Fleshscape sells like a really cool concept, like a really cool idea.
Yeah, and it's,
that I immediately want to get into. Whereas,
and everything from Morkborg you could probably just have in Fleshscape anyway. Anyway, here's that silly Dune RPG. You ready for this? This was it says the very official RPG for people who have definitely read and understood the books, but it's also very clear that the person who wrote that did not read or understand the books. This seems to be based entirely off of the movie Dune Part 1, not even the David Lynch one, very specifically the Denis Villeneuve Part 1 Dune. So, skills. This is really short, too. Skills. You have 4 skills. Your skills are Sand, Drug, Worm, and Oscar Isaac. You have 20 points to distribute among these skills as you see fit. And having read through this document, this one page, I will say it's very important that you distribute those skills before you even read the next rule. I'm not going to make you divvy up 20 points between these 4 skills, unless you really want to. Sand, Drug, Worm, and Oscar Isaac.
Wait, I'm choosing one of these now?
No, I'm saying, like, do you want to try this out? Do you want to actually test run this? The reason I'm bringing it up is, just based on reading this document, I can tell you, you have to spend your points, distribute them among those skills before you even read the second rule, because the second rule reveals, like, what they all mean, and it kind of spoils how the game works. We can just skip it.
Okay.
We can just skip it. But the idea is you spend 20 points, distribute them among those 4 skills, and then rolling on the planet Dune, you will need to do things pretty often. Anytime you want to do something, you roll a d10. And then what follows is a list of actions that you can take, and then what the roll means. So, for example, if you want to succeed at being dry, finding your way somewhere, or being patient, you roll a d10 and you have to roll equal to or under your sand score. Similarly, if you want to succeed at being wet, interacting with machines, or finding things outdoors, you have to roll above your sand score. And they're all like this. To succeed at being rich, being louche, or pretending you are not in the desert, roll equal to or under your drug score. To succeed at being poor, being scrappy, or understanding desert life, roll above your drug score. To succeed at being large, breaking things, or coming out of nowhere, you roll equal to or under your worm score. To succeed at being small, using fine motor control, or having limbs, you have to roll above your worm score. To succeed at seducing, intimidating, or smoldering, you have to roll equal to or under your Oscar Isaac score. And to succeed at being inconspicuous, hiding in tight spots, or being underestimated, you have to roll above your Oscar Isaac score. And the finals...
Huh.
And that's why I was saying, like, it's important to spend those points before you read up on how you do those actions, because I kind of feel like it completely removes any element of chance if you're like, okay, I just want my guy to be Oscar Isaac, so I'm going to put, you know, X amount of points in my Oscar Isaac score and then spend all my time seducing, intimidating, or smoldering people or something like that. And the final set on the rules, expressions. Everyone who lives on Dune has a favorite facial expression. when a character attempts to do something and their favorite facial expression is the most appropriate one, they roll twice and choose the result. The most appropriate facial expression is decided by the player and the Dune Master. The acceptable facial expressions in Dune society are wistful, mysterious, stony, scared, thirsty, ouch, or yellow gel filter. And that's it. This document's just taking the piss out of the movie Dune. But I thought it was pretty funny. And it did lead to us learning about this insanely expensive Dune RPG from Modiphius Entertainment. I guess it's officially licensed, too. They're using the official logo from the movie. So this must be... This is the capital O official RPG.
I'm just like, this whole like $1,000 one, this one that's like the price is over $900 Canadian or whatever. Like, I just,
the Imperial Limited
fans are like that.
I mean, I guess, but like, who's playing this $1,000 one? Do you think like Elon Musk is sitting down to play a rousing game of Dune Imperial Limited Edition?
Maybe Oscar Isaacs.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, interesting.
Timothy Chalamet.
The Dune Adventures in the Imperium core rulebook contains everything you need to create your own stories of intrigue and adventure on the sands of Arrakis as agents of a powerful noble house. A brand new version of the 2D20 system adapted specially for Dune. Have you heard of the 2D20 system?
I don't think so.
Interesting. It's another core system that I'm going to have to look into to puzzle out why anything is based on that. I mean, I guess that's what, it occurs to me that complaint I had where I was like, these core systems and why would we play this when instead we could play that? It just reminds me of the G.I. Joe RPG going like, why would I play this system instead of just playing a D20 system?
Characters roll two d20s, attempting to roll as low as possible on each one. The more dice that roll low, the more successes the character scores.
Okay.
Huh.
All right. So it's like Blades in the Dark, but you want to get low instead of high, and you're using d20s instead of d6s. Maybe?
What is the basic mechanic in Morkborg?
Oh man, that I am not prepared.
Basic resolution method is to roll a d20 and beat a target number. Default is 12. However, all rolls are made by the player, both to attack and to defend.
Huh.
Rolls are modified by the relevant ability score and adjusted by armor worn. Armor does not make it harder to hit. Instead, armor provides variable damage reduction depending on the result of the die roll. The better the armor, the larger the die. The penalty for wearing heavier armor is not only more difficult agility tests, but also making the character easier to hit.
All rolls done by the player makes me wonder if you can play solo Morkborg.
I wouldn't be surprised if you could. Yeah, I don't know. There's just... you know what? It's like... Morkborg doesn't blow my mind any more than Ceremony and Shadow Puzzle.
Boy, and you weren't even, your mind wasn't even that game. Blown by the very RPG that you made.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they both seem to have this quality to them where they're in a dying world. So they have that in common, at least.
I guess I'm going to have to cover Morkborg more thoroughly just because we're talking about it now. And I'm like, I wonder what the deal is with this. Maybe, Tom.
What is the deal with Morkborg?
Yeah. What is the deal with Morkborg? Why would I play this instead of just playing Fleshscape? I don't know. Maybe in the far future after we do Wicked Ones solo. And, you know, I don't know, Dino Car or something else. Maybe we'll get into Morkborg more thoroughly. And you'll come out the other end of it going, okay, I do want to play this. Like what happened with G.I. Joe.
We'll see. Is that it for our episode?
That's all I got.
So if you want to get in touch with us, see when we post new episodes or follow us, check us out on Facebook, Comparing Campaign on Facebook. And if you want to see our show notes and supplemental materials, check us out on comparingcampaign.wordpress.com. That's been our episode. Who's going to pay almost $1,000 on a Dune source book? Not me.
Level up, get your points in Oscar Isaac. I don't know. Play Notorious. I really like Notorious. You should play that. Get your target.
Yeah, if you can't beat your target, just self-destruct.